is docket 19-2111. It is United States versus Poliero. And counsel for appellant, we're ready to hear when you're ready to begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Can you hear me just fine, Your Honor?
Can indeed.
May it please the court. My name is Scott Davidson. I represent Francisco Poliero in this appeal. We have raised four different issues on appeal, but I'd like to focus the court's attention this morning in our short time on one particular issue, and that is the exclusion of expert testimony regarding DNA. This error, I think, exemplifies the unfairness of the proceedings that led to a 10-year prison sentence for Mr. Poliero arising from an alleged sexual assault. I'd like to focus the court's attention in this, with respect to this issue, on the timeline of events related to the DNA evidence. And it's a few items, and if the court will bear with me, I think it'll be worth
the court. Counsel, before you start into that, were you trial counsel below?
Your Honor, I was not. The trial counsel below was a gentleman by the name of Shane Jennings. I don't know if Your Honor has encountered him in southern New Mexico, but I believe he's a attorney out of El Paso and practices in Las Cruces as well. So no, Your Honor, I was not.
My first question then is in regards to what the trial court was faced with, the timing on the expert. Is that where you're going with your argument this morning, that the court erred in not allowing you with the DNA evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. The judge, Ken Gonzalez, had made essentially two bases for his ruling. One was untimeliness, and the other was that the notice that was given by Mr. Jennings, that was Mr. Poliero's lawyer in the trial court, on December 2nd was insufficient. And briefly, to address my outline of the problems with those two bases for Judge Gonzalez's order, is with respect to untimeliness, I'll get into the timeline and show that that's not as big of an issue as the judge suggested that it was.
But wasn't it the day before trial?
Well, Your Honor, that's not exactly, I'd like to put that in context if I could, Your Honor. So April 28th, the date of the alleged of the incident, DNA evidence was taken from the alleged victim. In June of 2018, according to Ms. Conway's testimony, that was the FBI examiner who testified for the government. In June of 2018, the FBI lab received items for DNA testing. August 14th, a cheek swab was taken from Mr. Poliero. August 21st, Mr. Jennings, Mr. Poliero's lawyer, informed the court he had not received a DNA report from the government. He's still waiting. August 24th, Mr. Jennings asked the government for DNA results from a DNA test that had been taken on August 14th, and that was a cheek swab from Mr. Poliero. On September 21st, according to Conway, the FBI released a DNA report, presumably to the government, because that's not when it was released to Mr. Jennings. October 29th, the government disclosed that DNA test result to Mr. Jennings. So they had it for, according to Ms. Conway, and just doing the math, over a month. November 1st, the FBI released another DNA report, again, according to Ms. Conway's testimony at trial. On November 5th, Mr. Jennings, in a hearing in front of Judge Gonzalez, told the court, we're guessing because we don't know what's in the DNA report to be released on November 16th. On November 7th, the judge had another hearing, and Mr. Jennings told the court, we don't know what's in the DNA. We won't know until November 16th. On November 19th, 5 days late, the government filed its notice of intent to offer an FBI DNA examiner to testify. On November 30th, the trial Judge Gonzalez told Mr. Jennings that in a hearing on a motion to continue, which the judge denied, that if he could find a DNA expert, they could testify. On December 2nd, Mr. Jennings filed a notice of intent to introduce a DNA expert testimony of Dr. Michael Spence to in rebuttal to the FBI examiner's testimony with respect to three areas. One, the YSTR, or short tandem repeat typing, and that identifies male DNA when you have a small amount of male and a large amount of female DNA in a sample, the autosomal testing, and also about touch DNA and questioning Conway's conclusions. On December 4th, on the second day of trial, Mr. Jennings filed a renewed notice and attached basically 800 words of findings, and those are attached to my brief as exhibit, or excuse me, attachment I. Also on December 4th, at 3:05 in the afternoon, because Judge Gonzalez identified, he says it's 5 minutes after three, he refused to hear from Dr. Spence before excluding his testimony. And Mr. Jennings had said to the judge, Dr. Spence isn't here in the courthouse, but he could be here within an hour, in a little less than an hour, I think were his words. And we can find out and answer the prosecutor's questions as to specifically what Dr. Spence is going to testify that's different from the FBI examiner. And Judge Gonzalez said, it's 3:05, I'm not allowing it. So he
Where was the trial at that point?
Pardon?
At what point were we in the trial?
Your Honor, that was at the close of the government's evidence. Now, Mr. Jennings had offered this rebuttal expert less than 2 weeks after the government had disclosed its expert.
Is there any reason Mr. Spence wasn't available in the court that day?
Your Honor, there's no, there's nothing in the record as to why he wasn't there at that moment, but Mr. Jennings did tell the court, and that's in the record, that he could be there in less than an hour. It was 3:05, according to the judge, and before 4 o'clock, Dr. Spence, rather, could have been in the court to testify as to specifically what he was going to testify to, and the judge did allow that.
And counsel, what is our standard of review on your argument?
Your Honor, it's an abuse of discretion. So if the ruling by Judge Gonzalez is arbitrary, capricious, then it is an abuse of discretion under, as you know, well-established precedent in this court and every court across the land.
And it'll help me a lot if you get to the argument of how this amounts to arbitrary and capricious.
Yeah, I will, Your Honor. It is arbitrary and capricious because the government's own expert was itself, their notice was itself untimely by 5 days. And I misspoke or miswrote in the brief that it was 12 days, and Ms. Villalobos is correct that it was 5 days. It was 12 days after the judge had set the deadline, but it was 5 days after the deadline for their disclosure. So the government's own notice was late, but their witness was allowed to testify. Mr. Jennings, if you look at this timeline, Mr. Jennings was repeatedly asking for the DNA evidence, and he couldn't have an expert ready before, or at least he didn't get an expert before the DNA evidence was disclosed because he didn't know what the DNA evidence would say. Now, most of the DNA evidence was exculpatory, but there was none of it that was inculpatory. But the government's presentation of the evidence to the jury, its description of how the DNA evidence plays out is quite a bit different in tenor and tone and even in substance than what it was telling Judge Gonzalez. It kept telling Judge Gonzalez, there's no reason for a continuance. There's no reason for Mr. Jennings to investigate anything having to do with DNA because it was exculpatory. But it didn't tell the jury that the DNA evidence was exculpatory. It never used that term. It used the term exculpatory multiple times in hearings to Judge Gonzalez. But to the jury, it said that it was the DNA evidence was consistent with the alleged victim's story. And that's because, according to the government's presentation at the trial, there was, at one point, the government asked Ms. Conway, they said, and the defendant could not be included in any of these items. She said, that's correct. And they said he could not be excluded from every single item. Isn't that correct? So the presentation that the prosecutor had to the jury was quite different. And then they even speculated with no evidence at all in their rebuttal closing, with no opportunity for Mr. Jennings to stand up and rebut it, that the unidentified male DNA on the underwear of the alleged victim, on the inside of the underwear, was probably her fiance. They said to the jury, connect the dots. Whose DNA do you think was in Ashley's panties? Adam's DNA. Adam was her fiance at the time. Your reason and common sense tells you that. Remember, you don't have to leave your common sense at the door. You could take your reason and common sense with you into the jury deliberation room. There's a perfectly good explanation for why there's male DNA on her underpants, on her panties, DNA different than the defendant. It's the husband, the fiance at the time, the husband now, the husband who's sitting with Ashley right now in the gallery. They are not, so there was DNA of another male, but nobody knows whose DNA that was. The FBI never tested it.
Isn't the important question what Dr. Spence would have testified to? All of that's fine, but if Dr. Spence isn't going to contradict that or offer better testimony for the defendant, why does it matter? And I guess in anticipation of your answer, Judge Gonzalez at the 305 hearing or his question did ask, what is he going to testify to, this Mr. Spence, Dr. Spence? And Mr. Jennings apparently fumbled and could not give an answer to that question. Doesn't that weigh into the abuse of discretion question?
Yes, Your Honor, so it's a two-part question. I'll take the second part first. I think if Mr. Jennings were here, I think he would confess that he maybe was not as artful as he wished in being able to explain to the trial judge what Dr. Spence was prepared to testify to. But he was going to cure that because he said the doctor could be there in less than an hour. And rather than allow Dr. Spence to proceed to the courtroom and allow him in and take his, allow the government and the court and anybody to voir dire him as to the specific basis for his testimony, rather than do that, Judge Gonzalez said, oh, no, I'm not going to hear from him. I'm excluding your witness. So I think that aspect of it, I mean, elevating 1 hour of court time over 10 years of a man's life, to me, seems a good definition or ostensive example of an arbitrary, capricious decision. We could have answered the question that you have, Your Honor, as to what specifically Dr. Spence was going to testify to. But we do know that he was going to...
Counsel, run that yes. by me again. He's already said, I have no idea what he's going to testify to. And you're wanting us to construct a rule that says that that's arbitrary and capricious when the attorney doesn't even going to put a witness on who doesn't know what they're going to say and they're not even in the courtroom?
Well, Your Honor, if in the context, well, first of all, he did say immediately after saying that, he said, Your Honor, part of what Dr. Spence is going to testify to is aspects of complex DNA analysis that, you know, I, Mr. Jennings, don't fully understand. That's why we're going to have an expert. And secondly, there were two notices that were provided to the court, one on December 2nd and a second one on December 4th. And he did identify that he was going to be giving quite different conclusions in certain respects than what Ms. Conway offered. So there was a notice that was provided in writing to...
Was that notice consistent with the requirements of Rule 16?
Your Honor, the first notice, I think, was inadequate. I think the government was correct that it was inadequate. But given the timing of everything, there was a December 3rd trial date, and the government's expert witness was disclosed 5 days late on November 19th.
So under your own timeline, the defendant was aware that DNA was going to be an issue in this case from the time he was swabbed in August 14th, wasn't he? I mean,
correct,
this wasn't a surprise. And then the government made it clear it was going to call a DNA witness. So I have a hard time seeing that it was arbitrary and capricious for the district court judge to not be amenable to an expert presented the day before trial. And Your Honor, the defense doesn't even know what he's going to say. If the defense doesn't know, how is the prosecution supposed to prepare?
Well, Your Honor, again, I can't speak for Mr. Jennings exactly, but the government's disclosure of DNA examiner to testify wasn't made until November 19th. That was not as early as August. I can't explain exactly what was going through Mr. Jennings' mind in August, but he did tell the court a number of times, we're still waiting to hear, this is a November 5th and November 7th, he still hadn't found out what the DNA results were going to be. And the government, according to Ms. Conway, she released two reports. One was on September 21st, and the other was November 1st. In the first report, apparently the government waited more than a month to disclose that to Mr. Jennings. And with the second one, November 4th, that wasn't disclosed till November 16th. I don't know why the government was not being held by the trial judge to as exacting a standard as it held Mr. Jennings, particularly when Mr. Jennings, when 10 years of Mr. Pagliaro's liberty was at stake. And so given the people were asking at 3:05 on December 4th, what is Dr. Spence going to testify to? And before 4 o'clock, they could have had an answer to that. Dr. Spence was going to be present in the courtroom. And
right.
Counsel,
you're a minute 20 over, and so you need to wrap it up. I'll let you finish that thought, but we're trying to stay on a schedule today.
I apologize, Your Honor. I think it's arbitrary and capricious because of the notice issues could have been cured in less than an hour, and the DNA evidence, as the government portrayed it to the jury, was quite different than the way it was characterizing it to Judge Gonzalez. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Villalobos, when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Matilda McCarthy Villalobos, and I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in Las Cruces, New Mexico. I'd like to jump just straight into the exclusion of the DNA expert, since that's where the focus has been this morning. As has already been noted, the standard of review is abuse of discretion, so this is an exacting standard. Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 16 sets forth a framework for the disclosure of expert testimony. Both the government and the defendant were required to provide a summary describing any expert witness's opinions and the basis and reasons for those opinions, and the witness's qualifications by the date set by the district court. The defendant's first expert notice was filed 18 days after that deadline and the day before trial, and it contained none of the requisite information. The notice did not contain any information as to what qualified Dr. Spence as an expert in DNA, and it did not.
It's also true the government's expert report was late, isn't it?
That is correct, Your Honor. The government filed its notice 5 days late, and we had a hearing on that matter. The defendant filed a motion to exclude that witness, and at the hearing, the district court went through the reasons for that being late and found no bad faith on the part of the government and allowed that testimony. And as Your Honor might remember, in United States versus Bishop, this court found there that one party's failure to comply with the rules does not excuse the other party's failure to comply with the rules. Otherwise, trials would turn into a complete free-for-all. So while the government's notice was late, the district court found that the defendant should have been on notice as early as at least August that DNA was going to be an issue in this case. And additionally, the government's notice and the defendant's notice were due on the same day. So his notice to file an expert disclosure was also due on November 14th, and he just completely ignored that notice. At trial, the defendant filed his notice the afternoon before trial, which was a Sunday. And then at trial, the defendant conceded that this first notice was inadequate, that it contained no summary, because he had only first spoken to Dr. Spence at 3 or 4 p.m. on the previous day. So Sunday before trial was the very first time he had ever even so much as spoken to the individual he proposed to offer as an expert witness. On the first day of trial, the district court heard from both sides, and after analyzing the defendant's reasons, the district court properly found that the defendant's notice provided an insufficient basis to provide to opposing counsel in order to prepare for fairly for cross-examination. It wasn't until 1:06 p.m. on the last day of trial, after the government had already rested, and 20 days after the district court's deadline, that the defendant filed an amended notice that was still utterly deficient. The amended notice still contained none of the expert's qualifications, and again contained no opinions by Dr. Spence, other than a single sentence in conclusion that stated, "The forensic biology / DNA results with this case investigation, the forensic DNA results from these 8 evidence items provide no scientific support for the allegations associated with this case investigation."
Is the record that barren? I agree with you on the reports, and I've looked at those reports, but there were hearings at which time Mr. Jennings was more complete about what Dr. Spence would testify, correct?
I think at those previous hearings, Mr. Jennings theorized about what he wanted Dr. Spence to testify to, but there was never any evidence that that was actually something that Dr. Spence would come in and testify to. There was never anything put forth that stated that Dr. Spence was willing to come into court and testify that absolutely, without a doubt, 100%, the defendant's DNA would have been found on the victim had this occurred the way she said. So I think that the district court properly found that while defense counsel theorized about what he would like Dr. Spence to testify to, there was just nothing explaining that is what Dr. Spence would actually testify to. Specifically in his report, he never stated that. In his report, he specifically only stated that there was no scientific evidence to support the victim's allegations in this case, and that was it. And that was something that was discussed at length at trial. Both the government and the defendant were able to question the government's DNA witness, Geralyn Conway, and when asked whether the results of Ms. Conway's analysis allowed her to make a determination as to whether the defendant sexually abused the victim, Ms. Conway answered, "The DNA results really don't tell us anything either way."
Hold it right there, counsel, because that's part of what she said. And I need you to complete what she said, and I want to know, did Mr. Jennings object to the conclusion? What she said is the DNA results really don't tell us anything either way. They certainly don't indicate that it's not possible that this could have occurred as it was alleged to have occurred. Now that giveth with one hand and take away with the other. Was an objection made as to that testimony at that point in time?
No, Your Honor, I do not believe that an objection was made to that testimony at that point in time.
You don't believe, or there was not one made?
As far as my recollection from the trial, I was the trial attorney on the case. I do not recall that any objection was made, and I don't recall, I can go back and review the record, but in my review of the record, I do not recall any objection being made to that. And Ms. Conway had just gotten through explaining the reasons why that supported that. She had just finished we had just gone through the amount of time that had elapsed between the sexual assault and the time the DNA was taken from her, which was nearly 10 hours, and we had just gotten through all of the things that had occurred during that amount of time, such as the victim touching
That's all well and good. My point is that she said that it made no difference because you don't have any yet, but then she turns around and bolsters the government's position by saying it doesn't mean, though, that it didn't occur just as it's being said here. That's a paraphrase on my part. That gave me some pause. But you're saying that no objection was made, so that would have been a plain error review in regards to that. Thank you, counsel.
Yes, Your Honor, and just there was definitely not a bolstering objection made during her testimony.
Thank you.
Now, if there are no questions, I'll continue at this point. Even after the defendant filed multiple deficient notices, the district court gave the defendant an additional opportunity to supplement his notice on the last day of trial. And when defense counsel was pushed on what his expert would come into court and testify to, what he stated was that his expert would testify to things beyond what he would understand, and that he believed his expert would testify to something new beyond what Ms. Conway had already testified to, but he could not tell the court what that would be. And while it's been asserted here this morning that he could have been here in an hour to explain to everyone what he would have testified to, that doesn't take into account the fact that the government, that would be the first time the government would ever be learning of this. So the court could not proceed directly into his testimony at that point. The government would need time to then take what that information he said he would testify to would be, review it, and prepare for a cross-examination. That's the entire purpose of these, of what Rule 16 sets forth, to allow the government that time to prepare.
Is there any reason there couldn't have been a continuance, a short continuance?
Your Honor, I think that the reason that there couldn't be a continuance at that point is twofold. So first, and I think most importantly, our objection was not based on timing alone. It was just at least significantly based on this insufficient notice. We needed time to review this expert's qualifications, find out what he was going to say, consult with our expert on this, and a jury, the government had already rested at this point. A jury was sitting there waiting, and the court found that it was not appropriate at that time to make the jury wait even longer to allow the government sufficient time to properly prepare for cross-examination. Again, in U.S. versus Pop, this court stated, even in the absence of prejudice, integrity and scheduling considerations alone may justify suppression of otherwise admissible evidence offered by the delinquent parties. The court had already addressed on numerous occasions that there was a pressing schedule that needed to be addressed. He had a pressing schedule. The court further explained in Pop that courts have no obligation to grant continuances ad infinitum to avoid prejudice to parties who have demonstrated repeated failures of diligence. The government and the district court repeatedly tried to accommodate the defendant, first by the district court granting the first motion to continue, and then setting the trial on a specific date in December to accommodate defense counsel's schedule. And second, by agreeing to allow an extremely untimely filing of his notice of intent to offer expert testimony, should it provide sufficient notice to the government.
What day of the week was this? Was this on a Friday?
No, Your Honor. This would have been, I believe, on a Wednesday. The trial started on Monday, and I believe the government rested on Wednesday. It would have been Wednesday afternoon. The defendant knew from at least August 2018, at least, that DNA would be an issue in this case. He acknowledged this multiple times in his pleadings, but he took no meaningful steps to secure an expert until the day before trial. The second reason that a continuance wasn't feasible when the defendant's expert notice was filed the afternoon prior to the commencement of trial was because the district court already had 60 jurors from around all of southern New Mexico there at the courthouse, assembled at the courthouse, and the government had flown in witnesses from as far away as Japan for a trial date that was set months in advance, specifically to accommodate defense counsel's schedule. Similarly, in United States versus Wicker, the court found it was not feasible to continue the trial where a jury was already at the courthouse and trial was ready to begin. In Wicker, this court explained that while a continuance may normally be the most desirable remedy for failure to comply with a discovery order, here, in view of the district court's pressing schedule, the status of the present case being in trial, and the failure of a prior continuance and deadlines to ensure timely discovery, the court concluded that a second continuance would not compensate for the prejudice imposed, and therefore the district court did not abuse its discretion in suppressing the evidence. The facts here in this case bear a striking resemblance to those in Wicker. And
would this have been a second continuance?
It would have been. There was an initial continuance in August, and that was a joint motion to continue, so the government was in agreement with that one. And at that time, the court gave a number of dates to the parties, and in October, in November, and defense counsel could not make a date work until December. So this trial had already been pushed all the way out to December, specifically to accommodate defense's scheduling issues. None of the Wicker factors favor the defendant in this case, and therefore the district court properly excluded his DNA witness and absolutely did not abuse its discretion in doing so. Further, even if the district court abused its discretion in excluding the defendant's DNA witness, which the government does not concede, this does not warrant reversal because the error was harmless. Given that nothing in the record establishes what the defendant's expert would have actually come in and testified to, particularly not anything that he would have offered that was not elicited from Ms. Conway, any error in excluding Dr. Spence was harmless.
Well, the district court suggested that all of the evidence from Conway was exculpatory, but I think Judge Baldock has already pointed out that not so much, because what the expert, the defense would have presented, would have said the lack of any DNA from the defendant is very surprising and is not consistent with the allegations of the victim, which to me is completely different than what the government's expert said here.
And Your Honor, there's nowhere in the record that reflects that's what the expert would have come in and testified to. That's not what his notice of intent ever stated. And so looking at what's contained in the record, based on what he stated his expert would come in and testify to, that's not present there. So I see my time is up. So I would just like to ask the court to affirm the defendant's conviction and sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The case is submitted and counsel are excused.